You're listening to the Product Podcast from Product School, featuring the best product leaders from Silicon Valley and beyond. If you're an aspiring product manager looking for your first PM role, or an experienced PM looking to level up your skills and advance your career, visit productschool.com to learn about our certificate courses and how we'll get you there. This episode is brought to you by ThoughtSpot, the modern analytics cloud company building a more fact-driven world with consumer-grade search and AI-driven analytics. With ThoughtSpot Everywhere, you can embed a highly interactive analytics experience into your data app and take your user adoption to the next level. Learn more and try ThoughtSpot for free today by visiting thoughtspot.com/everywhere. Today, Nicole Lau, an eBay product manager, is here to help us get a better understanding of A/B testing. If you're looking to solve customer pain points, get better traffic while finding ways to increase future business goals, A/B testing may be just what your team needs.
Hi, everyone. Thank you so much for taking the time to attend this webinar on A/B testing. My name is Nicole. I was a product manager at eBay. It's such an honor that I'll be spending the next 30 minutes to walk you through what A/B testing is and how you do it in a nutshell in plain English. If you are or would like to be a product manager, especially in e-commerce or any online business, it's important for you to understand A/B testing as this will become an essential step in your product development process. Here is today's agenda. I'll first go through my background, then I'll explain what A/B testing is and why should you do it. Then we'll do a case study in which I will discuss the basic concepts, best practices, and common pitfalls to avoid in A/B testing. Lastly, I'll share some resources in case you're interested in doing further reading. Here is a brief summary of my background. As you'll see, it wasn't a very direct path to product management. Before eBay, I was an investment analyst, then a program manager at a venture capital firm. Then I did some business development at startups and mid-sized companies, and that's when I was first introduced to the idea of A/B testing. Then opportunity presented itself. I joined eBay as a product manager providing experimentation services to internal teams. What that means is that internally, when product manager have a test idea, they will come to me, I will set up the test, run the test, come back with the result, and make launch or not launch recommendations. Then a program went self-serve, meaning product managers no longer come to me, they will do everything end-to-end in our internal testing tool. That's when I shift my focus to provide education and training on experimentation to internal eBay members. So what is A/B testing? To simply put, A/B testing is a process where you show two variations of your web page and see which variant performs better. Typically, you will have version A, which is your existing web page, also known as the control. And you have version B, which is a variation of your existing web page, also known as treatment. So the goal is for you to launch whichever variant that performs better to your web page, as well as learn what worked and what didn't work after you get the results. Why should you A/B test in that case? Because A/B tests or experimentation drives product innovations. See, if you have a product, in order to compete and stay on top in your industry, you need to constantly improve and innovate your product. A/B tests is a vehicle for you to operationalize this innovation process. You can build a test with different variation of your web page, then you measure which variation performs better. And then you learn from what worked and what didn't work and incorporate these insights in your product as well as building future tests. If you can keep testing and iterating, you are constantly improving your product. This way you can sustain innovation and turn your product into an infinite growth engine. Here are some really outstanding experimentators in the world. There are also multinational, multi-billion dollar companies, as you can recognize. And this is by no means a coincidence. every one of them run a couple thousands of experiments a year just to stay ahead of the curve. Booking.com on the left, it started out as a small Dutch startup having the same exact hotel deals as its competitors in the space. However, it turned itself to the industry leader in the space over the years thanks to its culture of experimentation. And fun fact, even the company logo is A/B tested. Instead of just Booking, they chose Booking.com because A/B test results show that this is more appealing to the users. Now, let's do a case study. Here's a scenario for you. You are hired as the eBay homepage product manager. You are tasked to improve and optimize this homepage, which is one of the most visited pages in eBay site. So where do you start? There are a lot of things you can do and many goals for you to consider. For instance, you can increase the traffic to homepage. You can decrease the bounce rate. You can increase the engagement on the page or increase the average time spent on the page. You can also decrease the page loading time or increase more traffic to the landing page, basically sending more traffic to the next step in the conversion funnels. Now, let's say that increasing engagement is your primary focus in the next quarter. Let's see how A/B testing can help you do that. Well, first take a look at the full end-to-end experimentation life cycle. With the goal in mind, you'll start off at the idea state where you come up with a tons of quality testing ideas. And at design stage, with that particular idea in mind, you will come up with hypothesis, success metric, and launch decision framework. That essentially means what you plan to do after getting the results. Then at setup stage, you'll configure the experiment and make sure everything works correctly. Then you'll run the test for a predetermined period of time to collect the data. At analyze stage, that's when you interpret the results and see if you can launch or not launch your variation based on the launch decision framework we mentioned earlier. But it does not end here. At learn stage, you will learn and gather insights from all the tests that you have run and document these learning so you will come up with better test ideas or better hypothesis for future tests. That's when you go back to the ideate stage and start the process again. So now I will cover the basic concepts, common pitfalls, and best practices in each one of these stages. The first stage is the ideate stage. As I mentioned earlier, that's the stage when you come up with a lot of testing ideas. It's not enough to have only one or two test ideas because the industry win rate is only 10%. Meaning if you have only one or two ideas, that idea is likely may not succeed, no matter how confident you are. However, if you have hundreds of testing idea, right, then on average, there will be 10 that will succeed. So that's why successful company, they run couple thousands of experiments a year because they know it's perfectly normal that only 10% will stick. So how do you come up with that many test ideas? There are a couple of ways you can consider. For example, you can do competitor audits. You can also do a user flow walkthrough, or you can do metric deep dives or examine the past experiment results for ideas. After having a list of quality ideas, the next step is to come up with a prioritization plan. So basically, you would like to see which tests should be prioritized first. The two most popular framework out there is called a PIE framework, which stands for potential, importance, and ease, and ICE framework, which is impact, cost, and effort. So basically on a scale of 1 to 10, 10 being the highest, you'll rate each criteria. So each idea will end up with a score. So you will obviously prioritize the idea that has the highest score. However, the downside of these two prioritization framework is relatively subjective, meaning that it's hard to quantify what a 4 means versus a 6, right? So I personally prefer a prioritization framework developed by CXL. I'll walk you through this framework. This is a lot more objective. So each role is one test idea. So we have three testing ideas right here. Columns, they are binary questions to objectify each criteria. For instance, if I want to see how much potential an idea has, I will ask binary questions. For example, if it's above the fold, is it noticeable within 5 seconds? So these are binary questions, very black and white, right, to objectify the criteria that you care about. This provides a more consistent and less of a gut feeling way for you to prioritize tests. Lastly, the diagram on the upper right hand corner right here, what I want to say here is that when you come up with test idea, it's important to consider the magnitude of change, meaning how big the change is. So for example, you can test a lot of things, really big changes on homepage, such as changing all the module order, font size, font color, everything. Or you can be tweaking very small things, such as updating a certain parameter within an algorithm, which the end user may not be able to notice the difference. So the bigger the change, the harder it is for you to attribute the experiment results to a single variable. And on the flip side, if the change is too small, it may not be enough to move a metric that you care about. So the perfect balance in that case is to change one thing at a time in one variable. And the change should be big enough to move a metric that you care about. At design stage, that's when you pick an idea that you decide to test. Your focus would be to come up with the hypothesis, success metric, and launch decision framework. So what is a hypothesis? A hypothesis is a proposed explanation of a phenomenon. The easiest way to think of it is coming up with an if-then sentence. I'll give you an example. Let's say if I improve the headline wordings of this module, then I hypothesize that users are more likely to click onto this Act2 call to action button down below. So now, what success metric you should use? I'll tell you that a good hypothesis should be indicative of the primary metric, and it should be the next immediate user behavior action that they're likely to take. So in our case, because I improved the headline wordings, the next or the immediate user behavior change I expect is that there will be more clicks on this call to action button. So one of the common pitfalls is a lot of people use revenue as the primary metric because, you know, management is understandable that they need to understand the bottom line. So revenue is always something that is of interest. However, the problem is that between the user seeing your headline wording all the way to make or not make a purchase, a lot of things can happen. For instance, they can be distracted by ads, they can visit 20 or 30 pages, they didn't like what they see. Then they decide not to make the purchase. However, you do not have any control over these things. What you have control over is what you change on your homepage and what is the immediate user action that you expect. And that should be your primary metric.
This episode is brought to you by ThoughtSpot. The modern analytics cloud company building a more fact-driven world with consumer-grade search and AI-driven analytics. Build stickier product experiences by embedding ThoughtSpot Everywhere's interactive analytics interface directly into your data app or product. No more delayed release cycles or incremental UX improvements. ThoughtSpot Everywhere's developer-friendly platform replaces static dashboards with an interactive data experience in minutes, allowing users to intuitively dig into their data and trigger actions in their favorite business apps. Learn more and try ThoughtSpot for free today by visiting thoughtspot.com/everywhere.
So that's why I have primary as the click-through rate of the call to action button. Secondary metric are basically related metric I am interested in, such as homepage bounce rate and module engagement. For guardrails, then usually the metric that you care about that you would like to monitor. Lastly, launch decision framework. This should be aligned with your management before the experiment start. This will avoid a lot of back and forth discussion and disagreement after you get the results. So let's say you have both primary and secondary to be positive. You obviously want to launch the variation to your webpage. But what if you have one positive and one negative, or both are neutral? Right, so you need to plan what you're going to do after getting the results. At setup stage, that's when you configure version A and version B in the testing tool. You will make sure that everything works correctly, primarily the user experience to be correct in both variations. And you need to make sure tracking is in place. In our case, every impression of the module and every click on the call to action button should be recorded. You will also need to make sure there are not any data quality issues, such as incompleteness in the data, inaccurate data, or any redundancy in the data. At run stage, that's when you allocate real users to your experiment for a predetermined period of time. There are a lot of online traffic calculators to help you determine how long you should run your test for. So I got mine from unbounce.com. So there are many out there, but they ask for more or less the similar input parameters. They will also, they will usually ask for a baseline number. In our case, the current click-through rate or conversion rate is 10%. So if I want to increase this current click-through rate from 10% to 15%, then I'll put design lift at 5%. Number of variation, because we have version A and version B, then I'll put 2 right here. Average daily visitors. Let's say we have 10K visitors per day. Then the traffic calculator will spit out the result saying that you need a minimum sample size of 115,200 users in order to achieve the valid test results. If you divide this number by average daily visitors, you end up a test duration of 12 days. So that's your duration. I want to point out that it is very important for you to run for the entire 12 days or the entire duration. This is because many metrics take some time for it to mature. It is very, very tempting for you to peek at the result in the middle of the experiment. And if you see some negative lift, then it's tempting for you to just shut up the experiment. However, as I mentioned before, initially, let's see offer B. It was not performing so well at the very beginning. But as you get more and more user, it gradually progresses towards the end. So another example that I can give you is that if you toss a fair coin only 10 times, it's not very likely that you'll end up with exactly 5 heads and 5 tails. But you cannot say that this is not a fair coin. You just have to do it for enough times, toss it for hundreds or thousand times in order for it to get to half heads and half tails. This is called a regression of the mean. So all this is to say, be patient and run the test for the entire duration until the minimum sample size is reached. Also, please do not introduce any new changes in the middle of the experiment. Otherwise, it's hard for you to know whether the new change or the original test is causing the test result. Now, at analyze stage, that's the exciting part. That's when you get to make launch or no launch decision, whether to iterate on an idea or abandon the idea. Let's see the results that came back. In version A, which is our control, we have a baseline number of 120K impressions, 12K clicks, and click-through rate of 10%. So these are our baseline number. In version B, which is our variation, we have same number of impressions. We do see an increased clicks of 18K and an increased click-through rate of 15%. So the improvement right here is plus 5%. It is very tempting for you to declare the version B or the variation is the winner at this point. However, it is very crucial that you check whether this improvement is statistically significant by checking the p-value and whether this is statistically powered by checking whether minimum sample size has been reached. The industry standard of statistical significance is 95%, while statistical power is 80%. What exactly does that mean? With 95% statistical significance, it means that there's a 5% that you'll get a significant result when there isn't any difference. When I say difference, it means users simply do not prefer one variation over the other, either version A or version B. With 80% statistical power, what that means is that 80% of the time, an experiment would detect the difference when there is a difference. Now, I know that I may have lost some of you guys already, and some of these stuff may have gone over your heads already. So, all this is to say there is some statistical validity in your data. So, the takeaway is that if you do have statistical validity in the data, you can replicate the result, meaning the improvement of 5% in our case, when you roll out this variation to your web page. So after knowing what all these statistical significance and power means, how do you interpret that? For statistical significance, if you have 95%, that translates to a p-value of 0.05. If you have a p-value of 0.05 or smaller, that means your test result is statistically significant. In our case, we have 0.03, so that means it is statistically significant. With 80% statistical power, when you did the duration calculation in the previous stage, the online traffic calculator should have already incorporated this statistical power into the calculation already, meaning that as long as you run for the entire duration of 12 days, the test result should be statistically powered. Lastly, to interpret confidence interval, which is the +/-0.05 right here, that means if you do roll out the variation to the web page, plus 5% may not be the exact lift that you're going to observe, but instead it will end up somewhere between 4.5 and 5.5%. So that was confidence interval means. Lastly, at learn stage, that's when you document the learnings from both successes and failures. So with the industry win rate of only 10%, it is very crucial for you to learn from both successes and also failures. And I want you to remember that many high-risk and high-reward tests, they do not succeed in the first attempt or the first iteration. So it takes learning from all these failures in order for the refinement needed in order to nurture the idea to a success. So that's why I cannot stress enough, it's very crucial for you to learn from all the tests. To do that, on top of analyzing the overall performance, it's best for you to also look at the segment-specific insights and discovery. So when I say segmentation, right, that means you can slice and dice data by different segmentations such as geographic location, user, agent, browser type. There are many segments that you can look into. So then you can see whether there is a specific segment that stands out, and you can learn from these insights and discovery to build a more informed test in the future. After that, as I mentioned, you will continue building more informed tests in the future, measure it, learn, and build tests again. So this is the full experimentation life cycle that I was mentioning. So now you know what to do for A/B testing in order to turn your product into an infinite growth engine. If you would like to do further reading, I highly recommend these blogs and books. So for blogs, CXL.com, they have tons of articles on best practices. VWO and Optimizely, they do have a knowledge base where you can find a lot of articles on A/B testing concepts. Medium blog, if you follow the hashtag experimentation, there are a lot of articles on experimentation. For books, these are the two I highly, highly recommend. The first one is Trustworthy Online Control Experiments by Ron Kuhavi, Diane Tang, and Xia Yu. They are from Microsoft, Google, and LinkedIn. They are the top experimentators in the industry. So this book provides a lot of real-world and practical examples and basically lessons that you can learn from all these examples. Experimentation Works is the second book by Stefan Tomke. He's the Harvard professor. This book provides a lot of best practice and also how to build a culture of experimentation in your organization. Lastly, I just want to share my contact with you. In case you have any questions, concerns, or comments, or simply want to connect on this topic. Thank you so much for your time today.
Thanks for listening to the Product Podcast. If you enjoyed this episode, it would mean the world to us if you would rate and review us on Apple Podcasts. Taking the time to write just a few sentences about what you love most about the show will help us improve it and reach even more product people around the world. And when you're done, why not reward yourself with some free product management content and resources over at productschool.com? Until next time, stay product-led.